Thursday, February 17th, it's an early annual event, the Congressional Wives Prayer Breakfast. I was up before 7, dressed and ready to go with Lyndon by 7:30. This is one of the days of the year that Liz would like to strike from the calendar. But I, perhaps it is my Karnak raising, find comforting and substantial. And if the veneer of sophistication may have acquired in the last 20 years makes me look at it with somewhat questioning eyes, it is the other side, the old-time religion, that plainly wins out. When nearly 1,000 women in the blue room, spreading out into the lobby beyond, Madeline Grant, it's nearly always a Southerner, was the chairman, and Mrs. Norman Vincent Peale was the main speaker. I hope I take a lesson from her book. A large part of her speech was three stories, vignettes, that told her message better than any series of nebulous words could have done. It was here that I learned that Muriel had quietly slipped off to join Hubert. She was supposed to do the scripture reading, but someone substituted for her. I looked around the full room, wondering what was going on in the mind of Mrs. B.K. Nehru, a Hindu, I suppose, and of the numerous Catholic wives from the diplomatic corps who were present, headed by Mrs. Sevilla Sacasa, because this is a pretty Protestant affair. I was glad they were all there. Besides the Congress and official Washington, I heard that presidents of the J.C.s all across the country had been invited, their way paid by some foundation, and also a sizable contingent, more than 100, I believe, the president of student bodies of colleges. And any time I hear an antidote to the long-haired, muddle-headed foolishness on campuses these days, I am glad. We finished before the men, and so we filled in the time with songs, old hymns, and my Methodist raising in Karnak came rolling back to me with the words, somewhere in the recesses of my mind, of onward Christian soldiers, and what a friend we have in Jesus, and sweet hour of prayer, until finally the men, Lyndon, Billy Graham, Senator Carlson, who heads the men's group, arrived in a flurry of excitement. I liked the line from Lyndon's little talk, where he recalled the wisdom of Abraham Lincoln when he said, I have been driven to my knees many times by the overwhelming conviction that I had nowhere else to go. My own wisdom and that of all about me seem insufficient for the day. Billy said he had been resting and reading and studying all winter, but was now ready to start on the road again. Then I went on to my Spanish lesson. Mercedes Ackles started having them at her house once more in January, and I have missed only one. Bethine Church, Grace Dodd, Abigail McCarthy, June White, Anne Celebrezzi, and I meet at Mercedes for 2 hours every Thursday, drink good, strong black coffee, talk what must be usually awful but happy and excited Spanish, and learn a little bit with La Profesora, Senora Lopez McGuire. It's my own 2 hours. Nothing else enters my mind. It's my special self-indulgence. I love it. It exercises a different set of muscles in my brain and sheds a sort of a light on the rest of the day. Back at the White House, I worked with Ashton, and then had another hour with Mrs. Provenson in the Queen's room on the Denver speech. Just a day or two earlier, I'd gotten word that a portrait had been done of me from photographs by Mrs. Philip Barry, widow of the playwright who wrote Philadelphia Story, done for one of the rooms at the Woman's National Democratic Club. And would I see her for a few minutes and the portrait to see if there were any suggestions, perhaps changes, that she might make. It came as a stunning and not comfortable surprise. I knew nothing of it or of her, and a portrait is a terribly personal business. But of course I would see her. And when she arrived, I was very pleasantly relieved. She was a charming woman, and there was much to like about the portrait. The impressionist approach, lights and shadows of yellows and all tones and greens mingling in together, with the White House and the Capitol like fairy structures in the background. My hair, I thought, looked very nice, and the eyes rather nice, and the nose, unhappily, just like my nose looks. But from there on down, mouth and chin were not good. The blurred, indecisive, sort of apologetic-looking, and the jaw too wide. I told Mrs. Barry I would be very happy to devote as much time to it as she herself would in an effort to do the very best we could to leave something hanging on the walls of the Woman's National Democratic Club that would be a credit to us both. She worked about 30 minutes. We planned to meet again. She gave me copies of two of her husband's plays. It had been a constant rat-a-tat-tat of people and need to measure up. So I went to lie down and rest a while, and turn on the TV and watched General Taylor, and felt like cheering for him as though I were at a football game. His manner so courteous, his replies so concise, he sounded so on top of the situation and like someone I could trust. Conversely, Bill Fulbright sounded philosophical, meandering, and muddled. And Senator Wayne Morse, nasty. Fez and I had another go at the Alabama speech. I'm doing it with the end of my wits at the end of the day, and it shows it. These periods of gestation on speeches are so painful that I think even Liz is going to be cured of wanting to get me to say yes to a speaking engagement. Finally, feeling mentally exhausted, but physically hungry for exercise, I went over to the bowling alley by myself, not even trying to get someone on the spur of the moment, and made the highest score I've ever made in my life, 183. And then another game, 154, and then stopped midway of the third game because the league, made up of the janitors and the people who work in the EOB, had been waiting on me several minutes for the alley, and also because in the theater, my next bit of work on my films was waiting for me. Quiet, soft-spoken Simone met me there, and we had a drink while we checked out the dialogue on one more of the old movies about 1954, I believe it was, before putting it in the can for whatever use it may be in the future. But I was interrupted by a call from Lyndon. He was upstairs. Would I come? I dashed. We had dinner a little before 9 and were in bed in time for the 11 o'clock news. The New York Times had a story about a Vespocket Park where, in a sylvan setting, the Franklin National Bank would have a small branch bank, both its customers and the public, on a site that had been a solid concrete parking lot. Either it's catching on or I'm just learning to read.